The opinions expressed by the host and guests on Where Did the Road Go are their own and do not represent those of WVBR or its management. Our aim is to explore the fringe, lost civilizations, alternative science, the paranormal, and much more. Join us on the web at wheredidtheroadgo.com, where you can send us questions for our live or future guests via email or the live chat room. And remember to subscribe to us on iTunes. And now welcome to this week's edition of Where Did the Road Go?
And this week on Where Did the Road Go, we have something very interesting and a little bit different. We have a man named Jeremy Limes. And welcome to the show, Jeremy.
Hey, Soraya. Thank you.
And your research and is very different from the normal cryptid research, in a sense.
Well, depending on who you talk to, perhaps, because there's I get into the paranormal, and there's a fair amount of people in that category now, more so than in this like 70, 30 years ago.
Right, right. And I've actually not done a lot of shows on cryptids. I think Lyle Blackburn is the only person we've had on dealing with cryptids, who had written The Beast of Boggy Creek, and who doesn't look at it paranormal-wise. And I mean, from what he's explained and the stuff he's researched, I can totally see why he doesn't look to the paranormal. But this is a pretty expansive subject.
Yeah, and you know, down there in that area, that Arkansas, Louisiana, and Big Thicket area of Texas, there's so much land there, and I guess you're more able to get away with a non-paranormal paradigm because you don't have to invoke a cryptid that has any special abilities, because he's got so much area to disappear in.
Go on.
But there are so many cases of where Sasquatch are anomalous type sightings are hard to invoke without coming up with some sort of explanation as to how they can be in an area consistently and yet not be classified. And so,
yeah, and we don't find remains or anything like that.
No, not at all, as so it seems. And you would think it would, you know, at least find something, because even though it's true you don't find many remains out in the woods because they decompose so quickly, you spend enough time in the woods, you're going to come across something.
Right.
So in terms of them just being a unclassified primate that is managed to escape our cognizance, it's just very untenable, because, you know, for 500 years they're living in our backyard. It's almost like somebody living in your house, and you get a glimpse of them every now and then, and you see some disturbances or somebody's taking something out of the refrigerator. But here's somebody's living in your house, and you really don't know who, and it just boggles the mind. And that alone, for some people, would be enough to invoke some sort of supernatural or paranormal factor in there. But also, when you have telepathy and you have personal encounters that help reinforce a paranormal paradigm, well, then it becomes much easier. And so there's a lot of telepathy experiences out there. There's a widening network of people who are having communications with Sasquatch. Now, this is all, you know, this is not empirical so much. It's very hard to get to take this to a academic level. There it is. You've got these people that they don't have anything to profit by it, and there's like I say, a growing network. Kuan Lapsaritis, a guy who wrote a book called The Psychic Sasquatch and the UFO Connection, and his second book, The Sasquatch People, has chronicled a lot of the encounters with these people. I was fortunate enough to I met him in 1987 and traveled with him and was introduced to a lot of these people, people out in mostly rural areas, of course, but some of them fairly close to town would have regular encounters with Sasquatch. This was in Oregon and Washington, so this is not so much unusual. And there were lots of areas where the Sasquatch could be, but these people had paranormal encounters and were had nothing to profit by telling about it. And the encounters, for the most part, were mundane. The Sasquatch would occasionally, you know, be in their barns or just passing through, and nothing, you know, nothing more than just one person meeting another. You know, nothing exciting going on other than just a passing acknowledgement of one another. Mm. But you know, these people they're there. I met them, and Kiwani's got like 100 or so documented cases of in his books. And I don't know. It's there is this element of this maybe a Warshash test for some people. There's a psychic ability, or there's a psychic factor in here. For other people, it may not be, and it may never be, because, you know, I'm trying to convey that this Rorschach, you know, that the, you know, you get what you see, or I don't know. It's hard because what's objective here? It does get very subjective, and there's no answers yet, and there's no hard things to take to the bank. So it's just a matter of feeling our way through. This is a strange phenomenon. It boggles the mind that we can be such a babe in the woods in our reality, and this is going on.
That's a great way of putting it. I am picking up a little noise. It might be from the fan you have on.
Oh, let me turn it off.
You know, maybe if you just turn it away from the mic a little bit.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's better.
Okay. All right.
So why don't you tell people a little bit of how you got involved in researching this type of stuff?
Well, this is a very personal and subjective as well. When I was as young as I can remember, I mean, it was before I even remember anything, I had this recurring dream of the Sasquatch. Kind of a funny little dream. It was I was going through a walking through a warehouse, and it was like a long building, an old wooden building. There was a warehouse with just furniture, accessories scattered around. You know, not in just a haphazard scattering of furniture and household goods. And as I would walk, warehouse was like a long, long building divided into sections with a door in between each section. And as I went into the next section and would close the door behind me as the dream started, I would sense that someone was walking into that section just as I was leaving it. And I would go through the next section, and as I was opening the door and going into the next section and closing it behind me, I would sense that this entity was further along and was gaining on me. And then eventually it gained so much that as I was closing the door behind me, I could feel it pull on the door, and then I would wake up. That it had gained that much, that it had gained a whole length of the section, as I'm closing the door, it's pulling on it, I wake up. So that dream bugged me forever, and as I was growing up until I. And I remember seeing a Tarzan movie, getting all excited when I saw the gorillas, thinking these were the people in my dream, and then, but no, not quite. And then and I was about 12 years old when, or no, I'm sorry, yeah, 12 years old when the Patterson film was filmed, and I saw Reader's Digest, and it showed the three photos of the Sasquatch of Patty, the pictures of Patty in the Reader's Digest article about the film. And I realized this is what was in my dream. It was it was just one of those psychic things, I felt quite sure about, and so it's been an obsession ever since. Like many people have had the same kind of thing. They especially with the Patterson film, once they see that, then they kind of get this lock on, and goes from there. And
do you think the Patterson film is legit?
Yeah, I really do. I think that documentary that came out a while back trying to convince people that it was a guy in a suit is they just have to ignore so much evidence that it is a true video of it. You know, even the breast, you know, and If you're familiar, with Lloyd Pye, I reckon.
Yes, we had Lloyd on last week, actually.
Oh, okay.
Ironically enough.
Yeah, I must have. You had him on last week. I didn't download that one. I have to go back and check that one. I guess I missed that one because it was afterwards. But he gives a good. He agrees with so many others that the details are just too hard and are just too unnecessary to duplicate that would verify that it's authenticity. You know, things like the muscle underneath the skin that you can see in the thigh. And
isn't there something about the walk too? Like a normal man can't walk that way.
Right. That's been analyzed through however they do those dots on the video, and also the angle of the leg. They evidently the Sasquatch like to pick up their feet better than we do. So for some reason.
Well, they have to step over more stuff in the woods.
That's right.
What do you think of the DNA work with Melba Ketchum?
You know, it's so typical of this kind of study that these things always wind up in a debate of ambiguity. She went and bought a magazine herself just to publish these findings because she couldn't get a journal on its own to publish her, as I understand, and it doesn't have the feel of a very it just doesn't come across as being sophisticated.
If I remember correctly, this journal was actually going to publish her, and then their lawyers stepped in and told them, you know, no, you can't publish this. And she turned around and just bought the magazine and published it herself.
Right. And, you know, what I guess I'm trying to say is I went to the website of the magazine and it was just, it was very amateurish.
Mm.
And just didn't do any favors to the research, is what I'm trying to say. But I don't know the research well enough myself, so I can't criticize it. It may be good stuff. So I don't know. I can't comment. Do you know by chance? Has anybody come out with a second opinion about the research and saying that
there was something in the Huffington Post a few weeks back saying that it was opossum DNA that someone had it checked and that's all it was. And she came back with a challenge that she would have her DNA re-examined by a third party as long as everything could be observed. To prove that it wasn't opossum DNA.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, it'll be interesting. Of course, you know, some people like the paranormal side will say, well, this is good. It's all good stuff. But, you know, you ever seen the movie The Nightmare Before Christmas?
Yeah.
And, you know, there's Jack who's jealous of Christmas. And he's cognizant of Halloween, and he's jealous of Christmas because Christmas gets all this good attention, and Halloween kind of gets all this bad press. So he undertakes a project of trying to understand what it is that people like so much about Christmas, and he puts holly under the microscope, or, you know, he looks at eggnog and all these other accoutrements of Christmas and puts them under the microscope, trying to figure out what it is about Christmas that's so great. And it's this physical examination of a spiritual essence that is kind of reminiscent of trying to understand Sasquatch through physical means. And but these things are good, but they're kind of secondary to the real prize, if you would. Anyway.
And so there's different types of Sasquatch, Bigfoot. I mean, depending on where in the world you go.
Right.
And do you
right.
think that's cultural, that we're seeing a phenomenon that morphs based on our culture, or do you think that these are specific to different regions?
Well, you know, it may be something about the geography itself that impinges upon the attributes of its inhabitants. And that would work for us as well as for them, and therefore the cultural aspect would be accounted for because they both live in the same area. Hmm. As a possibility, I don't know. I'm just throwing that out. But you know, I don't know for sure because it's still an unknown area. I guess Lloyd Pye has, you know, he has four different types of main categories of Sasquatch. The tall boreal forest. I forgot what kind of forest that's called. Northern forest. That's I think he called high forest. Or, but anyway, the areas of the larger Sasquatch, and then he had the more Neanderthal types in the Almas areas of Russia.
Right. Right.
And then the smaller size of China and the wild man of China, and but I think there may be many, many more. And you know, of course, when you get into just wild reports of people seeing strange things, well, it's like the sky's the limit. You get all kinds of variations. There's also strange things like the three toes, you know, and other anomalies of character. There's a woman making news lately, Brenda Harris, a Navajo in the reservation down in New Mexico, has been chronicling sightings of people down there on the reservation quite a bit, evidently. And she said that they're kind of aggressive, and her take on them is not, she doesn't mention any psychic ability so much, but she does say that they are they're not getting well along with the human population down there. And they're kind of terrorizing. And actually, there was a death, one of them killed. Also, two abductions within the last 40 years. One of the encounter was a Sasquatch that actually ran up to a pickup and took a little girl and ran off to the mountains with her, and the little girl was not seen again. So here you, I'm sorry, I'm getting away from the.
That's all right. That's all right.
Yeah. So she's got. She mentioned that the tracks were showing a three toe down there. I don't know if I need to get in touch with her. I just found out about her, but and ask her if they're all three toe. But sometimes the three toes, particularly back in the 70s, were more common in Pennsylvania and often associated with a more aggressive behavior as well.
Hmm.
And another incident of the three toes is the Honey Island creature down in near the Boggy Creek area in Louisiana, down in the swamps. And not so much, it seems to be very reclusive, so there haven't been much reports of aggression, but here it is. They got some great castings, and they're very obviously three toes. And so what's going on with that? Who knows? It's another part of this strange, almost this liquidity of physicalities that this phenomenon seems to exhibit sometimes.
We had Patrick Harper on a few weeks ago, and his view of the paranormal being like part subjective, part objective, it seems to apply to this type of phenomena just as well as UFOs or anything else, where you get just enough that there has to be some actual physical reality to it, but it doesn't quite come all the way through.
Yeah, yeah. And kind of like Jacques Vallée and how there's this recursive insolvability to this problem, that every time you try to pinpoint it one way or another, it shifts. It avoids a focus.
I think the problem is we don't understand reality at all.
Exactly. Yeah, that's one thing we can all agree on. Yeah.
I mean, it seems pretty obvious, but when you really start analyzing some of this stuff, it's just not. Things don't work the way we think they do.
Yeah. And so we're interpreting them through this veil, kind of, or through this through this veil, and as they reach our side, you know, when folklore speaks of dream time, you know, that may be the reality, and we're living in the kind of a dream time where our reality is fluid, and it's almost as if it doesn't, even though we have these physical laws by which we can pretty much master our surroundings and have this technological wonderland that we have, it seems that on occasion, particularly when it comes to humanoids, of unknown humanoids, all bets are off, and things can shapeshift, and you know, you got skinwalkers, and you got dogmen, and you got pterodactyls, and in the middle, that was another thing Barbara Harris was reported was pterodactyls down on the reservation, and that's not unusual. That oftentimes pterodactyls, Kiwani puts a chapter about pterodactyls in his book, and you know what the heck, pterodactyls, you know.
And that goes also to the Thunderbird sightings as well.
Yeah, perhaps the same thing. And oftentimes, while it's very strange animals in these areas, because there may be this gets into the interdimensional aspects of them using vortexes to go to transit between dimensions, and that if there's a heavy duty vortex nearby, then you may get very strange things coming through that vortex, and you know, you see them going past you on their way to and from the vortex, evidently. And this phenomenon of the vortex, it kind of relates to the Native American or just Native or Aboriginal shamanic abilities to go between dimensions using earth energies, and that the vortexes are like intersections of ley lines, perhaps. Here again, we don't know much. I was out in Oregon a couple years ago, and there's a circle of friends who are interested in this subject. The latest talk was about a friends who had gone up in an airplane and saw a Sasquatch running up a hill, and it was kind of running from the airplane as the airplane was kind of buzzing it as a result of wanting to follow it and observe it. And it ran up the hill, and then it just disappeared. And this is not unusual. People see them, you know, they disappear. And the idea being that they somehow managed to go through a vortex. And you go up to that vortex, and unless you're psychically endowed, perhaps, you can map dows for a vortex and such. But what they are is kind of like beyond us for now.
Well, we were talking before we went on air about Paul Devereaux and his earth energy ideas, which seem to relate to UFO flap areas. Would it also possibly connect to Sasquatch sightings?
Very much, and I, you know, I think that kind of goes along possibly with the boulder streams we were talking about. Mm-hmm. Did we talk about that on air or off air?
No, that was off air.
Okay. Yeah, but the idea that earth energies impinge upon our interfacing with these entities, and, you know, that might be because the earth energies encourage their incarnation into our dimension, or are these earth energies impinge upon our, like, our hippocampus or mm-hmm. other parts of us that allow us to meet them halfway better.
I also have wondered if, like, when you get UFO sightings, the first thing you usually see is a light. So if you're in an area that where there's strong earth energies and you see that light, that earth energy may be generating that light, and it may also be affecting your consciousness, your level of awareness, thus giving you maybe something similar to a DMT experience or an ayahuasca experience, where you then experience meeting these entities and you associate them with the light, when the light is really just an effect of the same thing that's affecting you.
Right. An indication that the matrix is being twisted or you know, torqued somehow and allowing a phenomenon to manifest. Yeah. I think that's a good way to look at it. Yeah.
And I was also impressed with Andrew Collins' work. I don't know if you've looked at his work with plasma intelligences.
No, I haven't. Is that anything like Walter Thornhill's work?
Well, Thornhill is more just dealing... I don't know if he deals with plasma as being intelligent entities, does he?
Well, no.
He just has the idea of plasma permeating the universe.
Right, but then there is that aspect of the glyph, that the petroglyphs that are in the shape of people, mm-hmm. that... are supposed to represent the plasma energies that he speaks of.
Right.
Maybe a connection there. I don't know. But just a thought.
But
Andrew Collins, he was on your show, but I guess I didn't follow that. Can you mention that?
Basically, he's talking about how these lights that people see are plasma intelligences. And as we get closer to them, they actually create like bubble realities where we interface with these beings.
Go ahead.
He also relates it to Paul Devereaux's work that these happen in certain spots because of certain earth energies.
Like the Marfa lights and
right.
Brown lights in North Carolina.
Yeah.
And does he say by what mechanism that how much of a direct connection there is between the hominids or the other creatures and the lights and how they might interrelate?
Not necessarily. He thinks it creates sort of a reality that's half us and half them, where we meet halfway.
Right. Yeah. Right. Right.
Which would make sense. I mean, the thing with most of these cases, anything, you know, UFOs or Bigfoot or whatever, there's so many variations that a simple nuts and bolts physical explanation doesn't seem like it would cover everything.
No. And you're like I kind of say, you're left with this very fluid character of reality that almost, you know, it dreamlike. It's very dreamlike. So it's almost like it goes wherever it wants to go, in a way. But that's so anathema to our normal way of living, because, you know, your car is always your car is always your car. These laws that we have, they're finely tuned and they're so consistent, and Lord, what would happen if they weren't? And yeah, maybe that's gonna maybe that might happen to us, where we start to see things change like that, as we're gonna go earth changes or something. I don't know.
Walter Cruttendon promotes the idea that we move through higher levels of consciousness through the Yuga cycle and the Great Year and such, and that we're moving up, and eventually our psychic abilities will perceive the world and be able to do everything completely differently in ways we can't even imagine from this perspective.
Right, right. And that we're in the Iron Age now. And maybe that's, you know, that's part of spirit. I recently was reading something about how iron is a deterrent against spirits. If you put an iron rod in the ground, you're kind of protected somewhat by having to deal with this higher realm of reality that might impinge upon your everyday life that many people find disturbing. So iron is a prophylactic guard against spirit world. And here we are in the Iron Age, so we might be guarded by these higher spiritual realms. At least for having to deal with them, and that's one of the drawbacks of being in the Iron Age and in this lower level of consciousness. And as we get into higher consciousness, perhaps our laws will become bendable, and I don't know. It's hard to say, you know, it's anybody's guess.
All right. Well, we got to take a quick 45-second break, and when we come back, I want to talk to you a little bit about the Ancient Ones.
Okay.
All right. We'll be right back with Jeremy Lines.
The opinions expressed by the host and guests on Where Did the Road Go are their own and do not represent those of WVBR or its management. Join us on the web at wheredidtheroadgo.com, where you can send us questions for our live guests via email or the live chat room. You can also check out our upcoming schedule, blog, link section, book reviews, videos, and links to our Twitter, Facebook, iTunes, and much more. That's wheredidtheroadgo.com.
And tonight we've been talking with Jeremy Lines, and we've been talking about, well, all kinds of stuff, actually. I don't think I can really easily define the first half of this show. We're going to talk about the Ancient Ones, and this is something I was not familiar with until I heard you mention it.
Yeah, the Ancient Ones are more humanoid. They seem to... in many ways parallel the Sasquatch. They'll be in their areas. The encounters will be psychically there will be psychic characteristics of the encounters with people, a lot of telepathy, but they are human, very humanoid like, and they can even they can interbreed with the Sasquatch. I don't know if you know Eagle White Song, a woman who wrote a book called Teluki.
No.
And she had Sasquatch on her area. I think this is up in Michigan. She passed away recently, but a pretty good book. And actually, Kiwani knew her pretty well. And she had Sasquatch living on her area. And it was a couple and with a family. And one of them was the Sasquatch, and one of them was a ancient one. And she was very humanoid looking, and he was very more gorilla characteristics of his face and such. But and so the ancient ones seemed to have a little more culture as well. And you may have heard me mention this book called Wolf Scratch Wilderness by a woman writing about the Cherokee, the history of a area in North Georgia, and talking to her children about the ancient ones, saying, and I quote, "The ancient ones were here when the earth was close to the sky. They knew many secrets because in those days, Dreamfather appeared to them often and taught them even as they slept. They learned many truths in this manner, including secrets in the afterlife." Anyway, she also goes to say that they were the ones responsible for building stone mounds in clusters and hillsides, they were given instructions in the dream time on how to place these stones. Now, we know that these stones are placed according to very sophisticated Pythagorean mathematics, and you know, perhaps the dream time could allow one to achieve these mathematics, not consciously, but you know, I don't know, but
now we're talking about like the mounds and stuff in central U.S.
Around the world, all these megalithic sites, like all the stone circles that were surveyed in the 60s, were found to have, there weren't just haphazard circles, but were found to be egg shapes that were incorporating Pythagorean triangles in their layout and such. And it's a mystery as to who did these megalithic structures and how they could possess such sophisticated mathematics, and yet this Cherokee legend talks about, I quote again, "Alas, my children, the secret rituals had been lost, but the power of the stone surely remains." Let me see if I can find this place where that she says. Okay, many stone mounds were arranged in patterns pleasing to those who looked down from the land beyond the sunrise. In dreams, they were shown how to place every stone in circles within circles. So in there's this metaphor of a dream as a method of instructing them how to do this. But these people were different than us, and we kind of like inherited these megalithic structures that they constructed in dream time. And so I have this kind of theory going on about possibly the Sasquatch don't interlock with us very well, because we think in a mathematical process that is different than Native Aboriginals, and that being that we think arithmetically and they think logarithmically. So
can you explain that to people a little bit?
Yeah, there's a study done by psychologists, a French guy, wrote a book called Number Sense, and he found that Aboriginals who don't have a mathematical vocabulary, they only have words for one and maybe two and many, and so they have no mathematical prowess at all. When they gave them tests and gave them a graph to fill out in such a manner that it would test how they think, and they found out that they would think logarithmically versus arithmetically, and that would be like the thing about logarithms is that you multiply in the realm of logarithms and you add in the arithmetic realm. So when we view how things are spaced, we think arithmetically, we add, and not so much logarithmically. Unless you're a musician, then you do think more logarithmically, because music is logarithmic. And so is everything else. Our vision works logarithmically, and our audio works logarithmically. But we conceive things arithmetically. And when little children, as Aboriginal tribes, and as well as little children, think logarithmically, naturally. And when little children are growing up, there's this point that they pass where they have to abandon their logarithmic reasoning and adopt the cultural arithmetic method that we all use. And you see this sign of resistance, you see this great resistance in them, and then they finally give up and say, okay, I'll go arithmetically and in their way of thinking of how mathematics works. And so perhaps there's linguistic difference between us and these entities, in the sense that they view this world in a more realistic manner, but one that, you know, our arithmetic ability to our arithmetic method has perhaps provided us with the technology that we have, but at the cost of understanding forces like the earth forces that create the reality of the Sasquatch. I don't know. As long as I'm on pet peeve theories here, another one that I'd like to throw out there is that in magic and sympathetic magic and all, you have this idea that symbols and glyphs have power, and just like vibrations of cymatics, when you vibrate these plates of pollen, they create different patterns. You've seen the cymatic plates that vibrate. Well, you perhaps turn that around and say that the patterns themselves can create the vibrations. If you can have vibrations creating patterns, then could you have patterns creating vibrations? And that's kind of the idea between sympathetic magic, where you have sigils and other glyphs that have a power about them. There's this guy named Ibrahim Karim, guy behind biogeometry, who is incorporating this concept into creating houses that are non-toxic and such for people. He's even counteracting EMF waves and such. But anyway, so the idea that glyphs can emanate an energy, I sometimes wonder, I'm changing the subject here, but I sometimes wonder if the manifestation of these entities that is somewhat not just impinged by earth energies, but also the concept of simulacra, which John Michel wrote a book about. Simulacra is that, there's another word for it, but it's wherever patterns of nature seem to manifest the appearance of a creature. So this using this concept of simulacra, which is like a glyph, which can emanate a vibration and emanate its own power. Perhaps these entities are coming through the glyphs of nature. Nature itself the world itself makes a glyph by which these spiritual beings can transform down into our reality through these glyphs, and these glyphs being basically very generalized and just natural forms themselves, much like simulacra. You kind of follow?
That's interesting.
So I wanted to throw that out.
I hope everyone followed it. But it's a very interesting idea.
It's it's in its infancy, but in the Judicata rock. Judicata is a rock in North Carolina, and a petroglyph rock that and Judicata the giant was a giant who had was a master of the animals, often a very Native American attribute of the Sasquatch as well, and in the Cherokee tradition of this Judicata, he selected a bride from the Cherokee tribe, but the bride's mother and brother wanted her sister back after Judicata had taken her into the spirit world. Judicata came back into the physical world to punish the bride's brother, and he entered through the Judicata rock, believed by the Cherokees as the spirit's stepping stone into the physical world of mortal beings. So here's this idea that Judicata came through the petroglyphs themselves.
Hmm.
And so that being this idea of the cymatics in reverse.
Huh. So the ancient ones, to go back to them a little bit, are they mentioned anywhere else in other cultures and stuff?
No, I have to say that there's not much in... except in New Age channelings and things like that, where people are having telepathic experiences with the here in America. No, it's more of a Lloyd Pye type of scenario where we're dealing with more hybrid forms of hominids. I sent you that thing about the old man in the crater. Would you like to cover that real quick?
Yeah, actually, that would be great. That was from 1895.
It's an amazing story. It's Major Ingram was a founding citizen of Seattle, I don't know if he found Seattle, but was a upstanding citizen of Seattle. He wrote a book about his several books, and one of them was about Mount Rainier. And one chapter was called The Old Man of the Crater, where he he was with some friends, and they camped out on the cauldron in Mount Rainier. And this has some lava tunnels going into the cauldron there. And at night, he decided he'd leave his friends at the camp, not disturb them, and sneak out and explore this cavern that they had been into previously the day before.
He had seen some unusual marks in that cavern, too, hadn't he?
Yes, and I wonder if perhaps they weren't markings of petroglyph's character, but I don't know. It doesn't really give a clear statement as to that regard. But while he's in there, he hears some noise, and he there's this entity that it's kind of described as it's a hominid anyway. It's you could say it's a Sasquatch, but he doesn't give much detail, so he couldn't say for sure. But it goes through this kind of a dance of rubbing his feet on the ground and rubbing his hands, and he sees kind of this glow about it and sparks kind of flying off, and he even kind of repeats these movements himself and notices himself getting charged with a sort of like a Paul Devereaux type earth energy. Mm-hmm. and then he has a telepathic encounter with this being, and the being talks about how his people were kind of trapped on this planet and were living subterranean there, and talked about let me see if I can find it, a contracting of material around the planet, which is kind of a description of a comet almost. And then what often kind of happens is that the entity kind of invited him or almost tried to seduce him to come to follow him back down into the bowels of the earth, and he pulled away and mentally resisted. But here was this telepathic encounter with a Sasquatch-type being chronicled by a upstanding citizen of Seattle back in 1895. And...
It would also seem like as you said, with the Paul Devereaux type of effect, that it was the area that the being, it, not that the being was necessarily magical and creating this sort of electrical effect around it, but it knew where to go to create the electrical effect.
Right. Yeah, good point. Yes, right. And here again, he gives description of it as having black fingernails and things about it that may not be exactly Sasquatch, but it's just hard to say how big of a variety of entities we're talking about.
Hmm. And again, that's another thing that points against the idea that these are just physical entities we haven't found. If there's so many different variations, we should have found something by now.
Yes. And of course, we have as well. There's a Minnesota Iceman and a couple of other,
Well, there's the case in Russia there with the wild woman.
Yeah, right. And yet it so often happens that it's almost as if there's this overriding controlled fate that you get to the cusp of solving something about this, and then it gets snatched away somehow.
Well, she was what, captured by a tribe over there, and then ended up having children after.
Mm-hmm.
And didn't,
right.
Didn't she like drown the first few or something like that?
Yeah, the first four, and then the four after that were taken away from her before she could. She wouldn't drown them, but she'd. It was tradition evidently for her people to dip them in a very cold stream.
Right.
Kind of immunize them, and they didn't, because they were hybrids. They did not survive. At least that's Pi's take on it, and. And
a few did survive, though, right?
Right, and the son was excavated. I think they found the grave of the son, and they have Lloyd Pye in his lecture has a picture of it, and he's not pretty. evidently, oddly enough, I think he had children. So here, there's not only was she, but I think Pye thinks that she was a Neanderthal, and there's good evidence that Neanderthals may have survived in the Caucasus Mountains. There's been some academic work to that regard, actually. I can't quote it, I'm sorry, but
well, that would be interesting.
Yeah, it would be. And the Minnesota Iceman, some people think is Neanderthal because it doesn't, it has Neanderthal features to it. But
wasn't that also like one of those things where they couldn't prove whether it was real or not because it was replaced with a rubber fake or something?
Yeah, it was, but you know, Ivan T. Sanderson and Helverman's, a couple of very reputable cryptozoologists, did a pretty good analysis of it, and they were quite convinced, and they're fairly renowned in their field. Pretty reputable, and
right.
And that the guy was had to give it up, though. I think he ran afoul of some law or something like that, and that it was replaced with the latex as a result of having to comply with some law or something. I can't remember.
Yeah, it was there was some kind of federal, they were going to be potentially investigated for murder or something like that because, yeah. You know, the government wanted to know where this thing came from and who shot it or something like that.
Right, right. Yeah. Yeah. Probably an EPA statement. He needed an environmental impact statement to continue with his. Anyway.
Yeah. So we talked briefly before we went on the air about David Politis' work on Missing 411, and hopefully I'm going to have David on next month. I'm just about finished reading all his Missing 411 books, and some of the stuff you're talking about connects very strongly into what these patterns that he's finding. And of course, he's also a Bigfoot researcher,
right? And you know, his first book, the pictures that his forensic artist does, those may be ancient ones because they're very humanoid looking, as opposed, you know, to there's no sagittal crest, and the features are not gorilla like and. And they're very more human-like, so I just thought I'd throw that in as an idea of the ancient ones. There on the Hoopla Reservation, they may be more ancient ones.
Well, he's basically identified different flap areas or clusters of people disappearing very mysteriously, very suddenly. And that's one of the things that strikes me. I mean, he gives a hint that maybe it was a Bigfoot or something to that effect, but a physical creature couldn't possibly have snatched these people and gotten away in the time period that they had without being noticed.
So he's implying teleportation or some sort?
He doesn't imply anything, actually. He's very good about just giving the data. The only thing he mentions is that in the Smoky Mountain National Parks, there are reports of wild men. Like, one girl hiked through the mountains, and she was lost for days. And when she finally came out, she said that mysterious men were following her. There are also cases where very little children were taken, and when they're found, and they're found in places that have already been searched, and suddenly they're there. And the children, yeah. You know, the few times where children actually remember or give stories will say things like, well, a bear took me and took care of me and fed me berries and then brought me back.
Right.
You know, or a dog did the same thing. And obviously, a bear's not going to take care of a human child and feed it berries.
Right.
But when you're talking about some of these creatures, and it sounds like there could be a connection here to what they're encountering.
Yeah, and if these were just, you know, humanoid, either, you know, like a primate, like a sophisticated, like a evolved, highly evolved primate. Well, you know, when we, in 1903, some people try to use the example of it took a long time to find the gorillas, but not so much when in 1903, about when they decided to go out and find these gorillas that they've been hearing about, they found it within within a year. They just, you know, they finally found an area. They were in the right area, and you can, there's no missing them. They create a swath of destruction. Looks like somebody laying a high power line path. And you come back later on, and you there, you know, you can find them again easily enough. And if there was something like this living all throughout North America and all of the places around the world, that if these were just regular primates that we're dealing with here, then, you know, how can they live in an area and not, unlike the gorillas, not leave any trace of their existence so well? You know, you would think that where they would make trails, you know, quite clearly, and mm-hmm. and we don't have that at all. So are they going interdimensional? Would seem to be, you know, where else are they going to go besides interdimensional, I guess. So that would support the idea that yes, we, you know, otherwise we would see all these signs just like we saw with gorillas.
Right. Well, you mentioned the Sasquatch being aggressive there and kidnapping children. But those, did people see this happen when this happened?
Yeah, this was a grandmother driving the kids in the pickup, and the kids were in the back of the pickup, and this Sasquatch ran up to the pickup and while it was driving down the road, and I know that sounds crazy, but it's all crazy, so, and snatched the kid and was never seen again.
Hmm.
And the book, Mike Pilates' book, is pretty disconcerting. That there's a lot. He reports a lot of that. He says, didn't he say that the there's a cover up in the Forest Service?
Right. Yeah. That they intentionally don't track these things because there are so many odd disappearances, especially in certain areas that they won't talk about it. They won't. He filed Freedom of Information Acts on some of them and couldn't get any information. So that someone there knows something odd is going on, and they probably have no idea what it is and don't want people not coming to the parks when it comes out.
Mm-hmm. And he's an ex-cop, so, you know, yeah. he's not given to, yeah, you know, he has some experience in that realm.
And like I said, the books are very, he just reports the stories. He may give a summary at the end with some similarities to other other cases, but he doesn't go off on wild speculation or anything else.
Right.
But he does, and the fact that he mentioned wild men, it sounded like the ancient ones. You know, mm-hmm. There was a case where someone saw someone running across a ridgeline way up high with something in their arms right after a small child had gone missing, and they were moving at incredible speed.
Yeah. Okay. Kiwani also writes that the ancient ones, like during the Civil War, they on a, the ones in Oklahoma, took in a few runaway slaves. That they've had actual people come and live with them. So that kind of supports the idea that they do incorporate other humans, perhaps captured ones, but into their tribes.
And of course, but it's one thing when someone disappears, and like I said, sometimes they find them when they come back, and they most of them have no memory or won't talk about where they've been. But there are other people who end up dead, and you have to wonder what's going on there.
Yeah, and there's a lot of reports of women being kidnapped, both in there's a famous case where the Yeti capturing a woman, and there's a variety of here in the United States of women being abducted, particularly Indian tribe lore of long ago, where you know some lore of a woman being captured by the Sasquatch and or the ancient ones and being taught how to do things and then coming back to the tribe and such, and then other women. I have a good friend in Oregon who lived out in the wilds near Oregon Caves. She had a telepathic experience with a Sasquatch. He was coming on to her and trying to introduce himself and dropping hints that he was a good lover. And this this is another case of somebody who she never talked about it to anybody except friends, and very believable. Know her quite well, and I think it's a true story.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, no matter how crazy something sounds, I mean, some people are just reporting what happened to them. And the fact that it sounds crazy doesn't mean you can just dismiss it.
No, and plus you've got just, and you know, it's just the exploding through the internet, just like so many things are on the internet, but all these cases are all these different takes on Sasquatch are now coming out so much, and it's amazing how much this phenomenon is getting a rebirth
in a different way.
Yeah there's it runs the gamut from beef jerky commercials to
That's a pretty amusing commercial, honestly. One of the other things Politis reports a couple of times, there are two things that I noticed in reading through all these different cases. One of the things he reports is that occasionally people, there was two people who walked out onto their farm, and as they were walking through an area they were perfectly familiar with, they found themselves completely lost. And they said, all the animal noises and everything went away, and they were walking through and they had no idea where they were. Their father came out looking for them, was yelling for them. They never heard him. And eventually they kind of suddenly realized, oh, wait, here we are. We're back on the farm, and recognized things. And their father was all distraught. Where have you been? And they were like, we don't know. And it seems like maybe they wandered through something.
Yeah, that famous case back in the 1800s of some guy in Tennessee did that. And they could talk to him. They could hear him. They could speak to him. Out in the field, and like he was walking through the field, he disappeared, and it's a pretty well known case, and I'm sorry I can't remember how it ended, but it's very very similar to that. Also somebody in Ohio called Kiwani about his experience of having slipped into through a vortex or something like that and finding himself in a very strange place and a Sasquatch directing him on how to get back. Evidently that can happen where you slip on a vortex and pick yourself up in another dimension.
So the other thing I noticed about some of these cases is that it almost seems like people are being lured away. They're not being taken, like they're seeing something so unusual that they're wandering through, and maybe they're seeing a doorway. Maybe they're being, trapped by one of these things.
I was going to say seduced, possibly too.
Right. Well, there was a mountain climber, an expert mountain climber, one of the cases in the new book, and he was on the bottom of the line, and suddenly the line went slack, and when they pulled it up, he had untied himself, and a storm was coming in. So they climbed back down to see what was up, and they found some of his stuff, but they never found him. He was never recovered. And to me, that sounds like he saw something so, with the storm coming in, something so amazing or so different that he had to go, what is that, and go check it out, you know?
Yeah, that would be feasible. You also hear tales of them being very benevolent and helping people, of course, when they get in trouble. They might actually, you know, they find themselves in precarious situations on a mountainside where they can't get out of, and a Sasquatch will show up and help them out. That's, you know, accorded. Also, another good story is somebody wrote Kiwani about their experience when they were young. They were at a party out in the woods of Carolina and were having a bad trip, much like Terrence McKenna talked about how these entities would kind of vampire off of your energy when you get on a certain, you know, you go through a certain phase of running into entities on a mushroom trip.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's happening to him. He was getting assaulted by these vampiric type entities, and the Sasquatch came in the astral and protected him and took these entities off. So they can be benevolent as well, just luck of the draw, I guess.
Huh. There's just so much to this, and it doesn't seem like it when you look at sort of the mainstream view of it.
No, it's a wide spectrum of possibilities. But, you know, I guess they're like thought forms. So it's almost like anything can happen. You know,
yeah.
Here's that Rorschach kind of thing.
Because you look at sort of the mainstream view, and it's either, well, these things are either real physical animals that are out there, or they're all hoaxes and imagination. Kind of like UFOs. They're either extraterrestrial or they're not real.
You know, so much of our reality is in that realm. It's just like evolution. Either you're a young earther or you're a strict Richard Dawkins, Daniel Dennett type.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think Rupert Sheldrake is closer to the mark, and yet he's, you know, he's cast out.
Yeah, totally marginalized and ignored.
Right. It's either a wave or a particle, but we're in a state of superposition all the time on these things. I kind of got a good example I'd like to share with you on that,
I
could.
Yeah, go ahead.
You know, there's a debate about whether or not there was a gravity collapse that brought down the World Trade Centers, or was it a explosive? So if it was a particle collapse, you've got mass, and you've got a particle, and it has mass, and therefore it's affected by gravity, and it's brought down by gravity. Under the official theory of the fires weakening the steel, mm-hmm. and that, so that's, there's that aspect, and then there's the architects and engineers analysis that show that, you know, that was a exploding wave, a wave of explosions. It wasn't a matter of gravity and mass; it was a wave. So you have this wave versus particle.
Mm.
One view is that it was a, you know, particle, and one was that it was a wave. And we are in the state of superposition where we have not yet made a conscious observation of which one it is. And so we're still in this superposition, stupid war, and suffering a stupid war on terror as a result as well. But, that is it may.
Wow, that's a really freaky way of looking at it.
Yeah, the Twin Towers, yeah.
It was definitely a pivotal event in our history, too.
Man, yeah, wouldn't it? Or it is, and still is, of course.
Well, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, well, we are just about out of time. It has been absolutely awesome talking with you about this.
I enjoyed it greatly, yeah.
Maybe we'll have you back on at some point, especially after maybe I talk to David Politis and we can, you know, see what, you know, if there anything new comes up. I also wanted to get to talking to you about giants that have been found, but we don't have time to do that tonight.
Yeah.
So, you don't have a webpage or anything.
No, I did have a website up, but not any longer. Just kind of don't. Yeah.
All right.
I've been banished.
And any plans to write a book or anything?
I thought I'd wait till I know something before.
Well, if everyone waited till they know something before they wrote a book, there wouldn't be any books.
Yeah, that's funny.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Jeremy. And Last Exit for the Lost is up next. Here's some Psyche Corporation to take you out.
Thanks, Ryan.
Come in, come in. Do you read me? Do you understand the numbers pouring over your connection to perfection? 5, 8. soaking into our transmission. 21, 34, 55, 89, 144. To the heart of the universe, ventricles and atria, chambers numbered 1597 and counting. Can you?